Welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mix Bell Marigan. And once again, we're continuing the exploration into the question, why horror? This week, I'm joined by the absolutely wonderful James Rodriguez. So before we jump into the questions, if you could just kind of say a little bit about yourself, James, and your connection to the horror community.
Certainly. My name is James Rodriguez, and I am a film critic. I write for my own site, The Reviewing Rodders. I also contribute to other sites such as Bloody Good Screen and The Geek Show and Nerdly, Moving Pictures Film Club. And usually I contribute horror, and I offer coverage of many horror film festivals, particularly UK-based ones. And yeah, I'm just doing what I can to shout out a bit more about the underseen gems and the little stuff that would otherwise get swallowed up in this industry, which can overlook such little gems.
I love that. I love that perspective of, trying to give a voice, some recognition to, as you said, the lesser known ones that might get missed. Because that's, I guess, the delightful thing about being a horror fan is we get a lot of horror every year. So having people like yourself who are like on the hunt to kind of draw attention to ones that might get missed, I think is definitely a good service to the community. So that's really great. But yeah, so with these questions that I'm jumping in, I just kind of have a few different landing questions, to start the conversation with. But this first one, I always like to kick these recordings off with, because every guest I have on is going to have some form of an answer for it. And it's a good way of just kind of getting to know my guests. So for the first one, what was the first horror film that you remember watching? And then slightly spinning off from that, because sometimes the answers can be different. What was the specific horror film that made you kind of go, oh, yeah, no, I'm a fan of this stuff?
Okay, so the first horror film I watched was, I remember it, I was about 6 or 7 years old, and it was during summer holidays. It was just one night where it was late, my parents were asleep, so I thought, I can't sleep, I'll just go downstairs and see what's on the TV. So I snuck downstairs, turned on the TV, and I distinctly remember A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors coming on. Particularly at the point where a teen is getting puppeteered through his veins. Ooh. So quite the impression for a genre to make on me at such a young age. It freaked me out, but I just remember I flipped the channel to something else, but I was like, I gotta go back and see what else that film's giving me. And I turned on to the bit where Freddy Krueger's coming out of the TV and just goes, welcome to prime time, bitch. And I just was hooked on that film from that bit on. And I distinctly remember that while I didn't watch that many horror films for a while after that, it almost gave me an illicit fascination with the genre. So I would go on Wikipedia and read plot summaries about horror films, character histories about like Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, and I just had an interest. But the film which I'd say made me a fan of the genre, I think it would have been, I think it was Evil Dead 2. I believe this was during my teenage years. I was much younger than 18, but eBay didn't have age restrictions on buying stuff so long as you had an account and could pay for it. So I got a copy of the trilogy, and I liked Evil Dead, but Evil Dead 2 just got its hooks into me the combination of horror and comedy, and it worked so well for me. And I'm just like, what else is there? And it, I just remember that was the, that was a starting point to get me to try John Carpenter's The Thing and 28 Days Later and just a variety of different things from the genre.
I love that, and I really like how you mentioned, with Evil Dead 2 specifically, kind of one of the things that I guess hooked you into it was the combination of things it gave you. It gave both kind of comedy and other elements, and that leads perfectly kind of into one of the other questions I like to ask all the guests on this series, because I do think horror fans give an interesting perspective. But for yourself, like, would you have personal criteria for what you'd consider, this is a horror film, this isn't? Like, do you have black and white kind of categories, or is it more kind of fluid and flux with how you view the genre?
That's a, I think that's a difficult question because horror can be many things. It's such a wide genre. You can have like this year's release, Megan, but you can also have Martyrs, and they're two different films which a have different aims and elicit different feelings from audiences, but I think they can both be considered horror. And so I think a lot of it is a guide on, it's maybe other people guiding us to say like this is horror. Maybe it's more a general classification, but I think there's also other films which maybe aren't widely considered horror, and in that regards, I think it's a sense of maybe something's not right. From our own sense of, from our own sense when watching the film. I have two examples of this. There's Karen Kusama's The Invitation, which is just conveys an undercurrent of dread, which keeps building and building throughout. And when I watched that, it just left my nerves shredded. And by the end, when it has one of my favorite last shots in a film of recent years, I just, there's no way I wasn't gonna call it anything but a horror film. And my other example is Son of Saul, which is a film which captures such a horrifying reality of concentration camps, but it's from the viewpoint of somebody who's constantly seen such atrocities that they're numb to it. And that itself is really unsettling. And I think they're, it's like what I said earlier, they're different ideas of what horror could be, both effectively done.
Okay, interesting. No, I like that. And yeah, no, that really is kind of gets, it is such a nuanced question. Like, there are so many different ways to answer it. And yeah, it is like, I'm very much someone who falls under the Mike Munzer camp of I will find any way to find to classify something as a horror, because it's like the one genre I just watch the most. So I'll find a way to say, if you think about it, this film could be considered a horror film. Like, that's very much how I approach my film watching. So yeah, it is a
Exactly.
very nuanced question, and there's so many different ways to kind of answer that. But I do like how, for both those examples you kind of gave, what really kind of grounded it was that they were films that elicited some form of a response. They were affecting in a way. And this like links into another question, which I have, because there is this like attitude that, like, I've seen a lot of this attitude from like particularly online spaces like Twitter and stuff like that. But from having conversations with people for this series, I've realized that it seems that there are actually people in the real world that think like this as well. But there is this type of attitude of saying, insert film name wasn't good because I wasn't scared. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think a horror film needs to be scary to be considered good, or does it have to just elicit some form of a response, whether that's fear or not?
See, I don't think a film, horror film, needs to be scary to be considered good, because the genre isn't one size fits all. It's like comedy, where it's in how they provoke a reaction from viewers, but it's not going to be something which is gonna be the same for a lot of people. It's like, what could make me shit scared might not even raise might not even raise a goosebump for you. It's all our own perspectives. For example, the film Insidious, it made me jump with that one scare involving a lipstick demon appearing behind Patrick Wilson. But outside of that, I personally don't find it scary. That doesn't mean it isn't good, but that's just how it resonated with me. And for somebody else, it might be the film which gave them sleepless nights for a while. It's yeah, and I think it does come off the back of what you said earlier, the Mike Muntzer attitude of everything's a horror. I think anything can be a horror if it personally scares you. It's like one of the scariest films I saw in the past decade, or longer, was Coraline, the Henry Selick stop motion film. And that's going to be a film which kids will probably watch and just have a lovely time with, when I'm just an adult and I'm like, what the hell? It's just our own personal perspectives it comes down to, I think.
100%. I definitely, and actually, I really like the emphasis on it comes down to our own perspectives, because I think this type of attitude, it does, and particularly with the ones that when you see it online or like someone who's like ragging on a film that's come out and stuff like that, particularly mainstream horror films. So I think Insidious is like, say, a good example. But I kind of think a lot of horror fans, as in, you know, people who like majority watch horror, that's like they don't really watch any other type of kind of media. Horror is the one thing that they can consume. I think a lot of people forget to kind of be critically engaged or aware of their themselves while they're engaging me with media, in the sense that, you know, if you're a diehard horror fan and you watch, you know, hundreds of horror films a year, when a new mainstream horror film like an Insidious or something like that comes out, it's probably not going to be as effective for you, because you're used to the typical beats that go into a film like that, you know, the kind of the quiet, loud, that type of thing that is kind of to be expected for mainstream horror. So you'll probably, those films would not be as affecting. Whereas if you're someone who doesn't watch that much horror and goes into the same type of film, it could be incredibly scary for you. And I think a lot of horror fans forget to remember that, in a way, we have become desensitized to what it is that we're watching. And yeah, I think if people were more aware of their own perspectives that they're bringing into films they're engaging with, there might be of a more, I guess, neutral or even more positive reaction to films that are released. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think that maybe that's what's coloring a lot of negative reactions to certain films?
That's the thing. It's we do often get the horror fans who it feels like they don't like the state of modern horror, and it feels like that no matter what genre can do, they're gonna have maybe something to take against. And I do think a part of it can come from nostalgia, just a sense that you want the films to be more what it was like back in your day, and perhaps you're not on board with what recent trends the horror genre are adopting. But the good thing about horror and its trends are that if you don't like what's happening, just wait it out, because you're going to get something new which is going to prove popular, and then that's going to overtake what's currently happening. I mean, we've had the slasher boom come back and again, remakes of classic films, found footage. There were all times when they just seemed all just seemed like they were going to be everywhere and unending, but they were just there until they stopped being guaranteed money makers and critical darlings, and then the genre just went, oh, what's next, and moved on to get audiences money and attention. And looking at horror now, that we had that era of quote unquote elevated horror, as some like to call it. And it seems like that what's coming out now with oh, I don't know how to describe this trend, but we're all going to the World's Fair, and Skinamarink followed in were in that same kind of trend. And there was news today of A24 but essentially going to make a film from a 17-year-old director whose film is going to be in the same ballpark as those two previous films I listed. And maybe that's what's going to come next, because they're quite, well, not a lot of money it seems to go into making them, but the high return is probably what studios are going to be looking to. So yeah, just they're like buses. You can wait around for the next one. It's going to be there eventually.
Exactly, and 100%. I think, like, that's what it is. Like, the tr you know, we just noticed the trends that replaced things that were popular, and I think those type of films that you mentioned seems to be more of them seem to be on the horizon. But also, I think, kind of almost like traditional camp horror seems to be having a rise in popularity again. Like last year,
Oh,
we had
yeah.
Malignant, Megan this, last month, and films of that vein that are just, not afraid to just be silly. And I think we're going to see more of those type of films too. And it's I think that's kind of a reaction both to, as you said, the quote unquote almost decade of elevated horror type horror films, but also a reaction to, 3, 4 years of kind of COVID lockdowns and stuff like that. It's like the appetite for what people are looking for is something very different. But I really like what your point about saying, that certain mindset of not being happy with whatever the genre is putting out now. Like, it does come from, as you said, a sense of nostalgia. And because I do think, like, most horror fans, kind of like yourself, and Evil Dead 2 was kind of what made you, or amongst some other films, like in your teen years, was what made you go, oh yeah, I like this stuff. Most people discover horror properly when they are in their teenage years. So I think, whatever films were part of the zeitgeist when you were a teenager is probably going to influence the type of horror that you gravitate towards. So I'd imagine that anyone who was a teen, discovering horror films over the last decade, when we were, like really a golden era of horror, I'd say films like Malignant and Megan, or those type of more kind of just campy films, or even Orphan First Kill, stuff like that, is probably going to be viewed as, oh no, I don't like this type of stuff. And it's, yeah, I think it's just like maybe it's my bemoaning the state of modern horror fans, I just rather than the genre, but I just wish more people would just kind of, like, it's weird. I was like, you see this
Oh, yeah.
a lot online that, and I'm just a little bit of a ramble, but you see this a lot online that there's almost like two camps. There's one camp of, hashtag let people enjoy things, and then the other camp is let people not like things. It's like po 50-50 polarizing opinions on how we should engage with media. And I'm just like, just let people have their own opinions, but don't shit on someone else's. Just
Yeah.
just in like that. I think how is that hard? But it seems very hard for a lot of people to grasp.
Oh yeah, just look at what it did to like the Star Wars fandom, for example. It's fascinating how people can't just understand. It's not for me, but that's all right. There'll be something else for me.
Exactly. And like, I think, as someone who engages with a lot of, horror films and follows a lot of people in the horror community, like, I think there's this weird attitude of like some people like mistaking their own like dislike of a film for being like a valid kind of criticism of a film, and kind of they'll be like, oh, I didn't like this film, and they'll substitute their kind of emotive reaction to it as a criticism of why the film was bad. And it's just like, well, no, that's not how you do that. You're supposed to kind of remove your own feelings of it, critique the piece, the film as on its own right, and then kind of also, if you want, throw in a, I also didn't care for it, but as a film itself, it worked here, it didn't work here. And yeah, as someone who does like is a critic and engages in that style of like, consuming media, what do you think on that? Do you think that there's maybe too much quote unquote online criticism of film these days?
I think a lot of the problem is a lot of there is, I think there's always room for open and honest discussions about the media which we consume and maybe the stuff which we thought worked well and the stuff which we're a bit more disappointed by. But I think the trouble is a lot of this conversation is happens on Twitter. And you can't really, when you've only got like 200 characters, there's no room for nuance or a lot well developed thoughts. And a lot of the time, it just leads to reactionary anger, and maybe things can become misconstrued. And then you've got the shitheads who just go for outright bigotry. I think there is room for it, but if you're hoping to find it on Twitter, there's other places to look.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's almost the answer to every kind of problem. If you're looking to Twitter for anything kind of positive, you're making a mistake. Turn back, look elsewhere. Especially post Elon Musk taking over, it's just becoming more of a
Oh, yes.
cesspool, more of a cesspool of terribleness. But picking up on something that you kind of said there, like, kind of being more aware of what it is that we're, kind of consuming and how we're consuming it and stuff like that. That actually links to one of the big questions that I've been asking for this series, because I think it is something that we as horror fans, and for like, it's something we have to grapple with all the time. But I want to know, like, how do you feel about like censorship when it comes to particularly like, the genre itself, but I guess wider media? Like, would you say there's a line on like, what is acceptable to be portrayed on film in cinema, or do you think if we put a line in place, it's like a domino effect to more worse things being banned?
I think the thing with censorship is we've seen the news regarding like Batgirl essentially getting locked away and the People's Joker being pulled from its public showings. What that's shown is if you're going to censor something, all you're going to do is make it seem even more enticing. It's like the films that the BBFC banned in the UK were essentially, I haven't seen all the films that got banned by the BBFC. I don't think I've even seen a quarter of them, but I've heard people who've gone through that list, and the way they summarized it is a lot of the films essentially have been given more attention, more notoriety, more eyes on them than if they were just ignored, if they were just released and the BBFC did nothing. Because I don't think hiding something away like that helps in the way such bodies doing it believe it will. But when it comes to showing and what on screen and what's depicted, I look to extreme cinema because I think that's an interesting case of how you can approach taboo topics and conversations through shocking means. And it's funny how with extreme cinema, a lot of the, I feel extreme cinema can often be a bit looked down upon and branded as just filth. filth and disgusting and that, but they offer conversations about stuff which it feels like we're still struggling to have in everyday life and in everyday media. So I wonder if a part of, say, the dismissal of extreme cinema is down to giving voice to such topics which a lot of outlets still feel, oh no, we can't do that. How dare we even approach the idea of talking about such a thing when conversations are probably a better thing to have? Because if you just turn away from something, if you try ignoring it, then surely that does more harm than if you can actually have a conversation about it like people should in that way.
100%. Oh, there's so much that you're saying there, and it's like I could go so many different rabbit holes, and I'm just loving it. That's a lot of great stuff there. And but I think first, like talking about, as you said, the BBFC and like video nasties lists and that type of stuff. And I 100% agree. And I think it's Stephen King said something similar when they're list, saying these books should be banned, that's your sign to go and seek out those books. And I think it's like it's that it is that thing of like those that are in power that want to retain power, that don't want the status quo to be affected or changed, will do whatever is in their power to try and keep it, keep everything the way it is. So anything that threatens it is considered bad for morals, and they'll come up with reasons why it shouldn't exist. And like whether it's books or in the same thing with certain films. And it's like that kind of like catch 22. The second that you start coming up with a list of, oh no, you're not allowed to look at this, it's going to pique curiosity because humans are curious people, and they'll be like, oh, well, there's a reason that they're saying I can't look at this, so I'm going to seek it out and make my mind up for myself. So yeah, I definitely think that type of like act of censorship, of blanket censorship, of like an organization deciding, no, you're not allowed to look at this, or you're not allowed to read this, I think that's stupid. That's just doesn't make sense. Now, I can get on board with, once it's kind of it makes sense, but I can get on board with, say, rating systems, which is technically a form of censorship. That's more someone saying, yep, yeah, this thing is fine to exist, but we kind of think, it's content that anyone below this age shouldn't really be consuming because they're not ready, or until they've had a conversation with a parent or something like that. That I'm on board with, because that's kind of just trying to be, I guess, protective, but still allowing something to exist, as opposed to no blanket ban. So I'm on board with that type of kind of thoughtful censorship, I guess. But coming back to kind of what you're saying about extreme cinema and how it provokes conversation, I think that's a really interesting topic, and it's one that you could have like another 2 hour podcast conversation on. There's so much, like there's so much to in that realm to talk about. But I do think I really like how you're kind of picking up on that, it seems that there's this attitude of not wanting to touch certain topics or certain conversation. And I do think that's probably what it is. I think there's like this deliberate like cognitive dissonance of like not wanting to acknowledge that something is a problem, or that something is just like something that happens in the world, and kind of just push it to the side. And so like one, I guess, perfect kind of example of that is like, say, one of the most famous ones when it comes to extreme cinema in this conversation, but say Cannibal Holocaust. Like, Cannibal Holocaust is a film that has real animal death in the film. And it's like one of those things where it's like, if you're, say, a meat eater and you then criticize the depiction of animal death on the film, but then you're going home and like eating a burger for your dinner, like, where's the line? Why is like one type of animal death fine? It's like that weird kind of, either be consistent with your morals or admit that, you're fine. If you're fine with it in one way, you have to be fine with it in another. And it's a tricky one. But I think for me, particularly when it comes to like say extreme cinema and like an offshoot of extreme cinema, maybe, but it's like a subgenre in of itself of just horror, but like say rape revenge films and that type of
Oh, yeah.
genre, like as someone, as a survivor of that type of assault, I find those films very cathartic. I get something from them, but I can understand why those type of films could be incredibly triggering for others. But for me, when it comes to extreme cinema, particularly that type of specific subgenre, it really comes for me, the most important thing is who's making it and what's the intent. Because I think that's when you get different films. Like, and in my head, like the two kind of, I guess, perfect comparisons would say like Carly Fargeats. I don't know, I'm probably butchering the surname, but her film Revenge, from I think 2017, 2018, around then, or maybe even later. But that is one of my favorite films of that subgenre. I think it's absolutely expertly made. It's really powerful and cathartic, but it's telling the story of a femme person, and it's written and directed by a woman, femme person. So you get that nuance. Whereas on the flip side, another film that kind of would possibly exist within that maybe subgenre, but maybe more extreme side, but say Megan Is Missing. That is a film that also deals with very similar topics, but is made by a man. And watching that film, it just felt exploitative. And I couldn't divorce myself from that feeling. And so for me, it really comes down to what was the filmmaker's intent or who is making it when it comes to these type of films. So this, after my little long preface, but it leads to kind of this other question which I have, and I think it's again something a lot of horror fans do have to kind of grapple with or reconcile with. But do you think the concept of, say, like the death of the author can apply to horror films? Like, do you think that, a film, like a filmmaker, is possibly responsible for what they're putting out into the world? Like, does their intent come into it once the film is out there? Is it separate from them? What do you think on that?
I think in regards to this, there can be a conversation where, say, the creative puts too much of their own bad behavior into the work, then there's something to that which makes it even more difficult to have that separation of art from artist, which comes up a lot more regularly nowadays. For example, considering all that come out about Woody Allen, it's looking at his films and noticing how it's usually him or some insert to play essentially him dating much, much younger women at some point, even teenagers, which just makes it go, oh, yeah, that's a bit difficult to separate. And then on a more horrific side of things, there was a notable thing where Victor Salva, considering everything regarding him in Jeepers Creepers 3, he put a line of dialogue in which essentially a character tries justifying child molestation, which, from what I hear, ended up getting taken out, but the fact it was ever there in the first place is really disconcerting. Outside of that, I don't think it's fair to blame filmmakers for how people take in their films and how they react to it. And my favorite example of this is you have The Matrix, an action fantasy which was wonderfully directed by Lana and Lily Wachowski, and it helped them come to terms with their identity and transition to their true selves. But then you have incels and men's right activists who learned nothing from the film, so they embraced it and co-opted terms like red-pilled to fit their own bigoted ideals, while at the same time they're picketing against transgender people having basic human rights, while clearly learning fucking nothing, considering who made the film they gravitated so much towards.
Hard agreement there. And yes, I think like that with that specific nuanced topic of art versus artist, it is, you know, as you said, it really comes down to how much of the artist is in the specific piece of media. So, for example, a Victor Salva or Woody Allen, or if we look more towards, say, music and stuff like that, it gets even more difficult because, like, that is literally the person, you know, Marilyn Manson, for example. Like, there is no, like, I cannot listen to anything by that terrible, abusive asshole because all the music is him. You can't separate it. With films, you know, I guess you can, you know, make a argument that a lot of films are collaborative pieces, you know, so yes, like I can't, you know, watch anything Jeepers Creepers because I
Same.
think Vic, you can just feel Victor Salva's grubby hands all over it. And the same way, I no longer enjoy watching anything by Woody Allen because, as you said, you just notice it, notice that, and you're just like, ugh, no, this is uncomfortable. But then other films, like, for example, early Roman Polanski stuff. I can still watch early Roman Polanski stuff because that a lot of those films were before everything shitty about Polanski happened. So it's easier to kind of have that divorcing of art and artist. But I think for me, at the end of the day, it's what someone's own kind of their own kind of preferences, like, you know, if they themselves are able to engage with an existing piece of media made by a problematic person, fine. Go, you know, go for it. Watch what you can, watch what you're able to. Because there's a difference between, hey, I'm acknowledging that this person is a terrible creep, but I still gain something from this movie or this show or whatever, versus I know this is a terrible person. I'm still going to put money in their pocket by watching their new movie. Or, you know, I think there's a difference between financially supporting a terrible person and just continuing to engage with something that already exists. And I think that's really the where I would kind of draw the line. Like, you know, I'm not really going to judge someone if they're able to still watch something, even though I can't, you know, more power to you. But you know, if you're the next person in line to get the new Harry Potter game, then I'm gonna be like, no, I'm gonna be looking a bit side-eye at you because, you know, that's just no. But
Agreed. It's like I couldn't do it to myself to go out and support, say, the new David O. Russell film, which had a big starry cast. But in all honesty, places like CEX are perfect, where you can just get a secondhand DVD to essentially delve into a film if you can overlook that stuff and without supporting the shitty people who might benefit off it. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to our own personal preferences and how we approach this. And no amount of just saying, how can you watch this and that is, I mean, you can highlight the shitty things that have come to light with the people involved, but it comes back to the censorships thing of if you say to someone, no, don't watch that, or how can you watch that, then they might be even more interested to check it out despite all the problematic stuff included, let's say.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's really what it is. Like, you know, I think there's, you know, there's one thing to say, hey, just so you know, so and so is shitty because of X reason. And just giving the information out there, do with it what you will, versus forbidding someone from doing something. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you just have to put the information in someone's hands and I guess trust that they. But I can't even say like trust that they do. Well, no, actually, I can't. But they're, you know, trust that they do the right thing because I think there on certain things there is a right way and a wrong way. But at the end of the day, it is what people choose to do themselves. I'm not gonna force someone to do something, even if I'm gonna be side-eyeing you if you do it. But kind of leading off from that in a different kind of direction, but this question, which I had written down for this series in the last few weeks, this question seems even more prevalent because of all like the kind of reaction to the press and stuff like that for Brandon Cronenberg's new film Infinity Pool. But the question I wrote down was, horror seems to be the only genre that's not falling victim to, I guess, the mass sanitization and desexualization of media that we're seeing elsewhere. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think like it happens to be just coincidental that it's this way, or do you think it's like deliberately, horror is deliberately kind of putting the middle finger up to society, trying to get more desexualized, and not in a we're just no longer seeing nudity on screen, but more of a it's more of a like a pervasive kind of wider rise in social puritanism of like that's really disturbing to me of like, oh no, you can't, have any type of like, interactions between people. And yeah, I want to know what you think about that. Do you think that like horror will continue to be the genre that rejects the way society is kind of on a wider scale going?
I think if any genre is going to do that, it's going to be horror because it's always felt like the scrappy little outsider. It's constantly been a profitable genre at the box office. It keeps getting such love from critics, particularly over the past few years and that. But it still feels like it's constantly disrespected at and sneered at by people. And the way it keeps being shut out of awards conversations, unless they can, the films can be reclassified as some kind of thriller, is ridiculous. I mean, its awards are meant to congratulate essentially the best films of the year, and you're shutting out a large part of films which are released every year. Come on, that's some kind of bullshit. So you've got other genres who feel like they're becoming more chased to appeal to a wider section of people, whereas horror is just going, fuck that, we're doing what we've always done. And I wonder if part of the way is because there is already an uphill battle, it seems like they got to have with the wider perception of horror. But I can't see another genre in which Ty West would get to make a trilogy which would begin with a film about filmmakers trying to make a adult movie on a ranch, which turns into a slasher. I don't see. Well, to mention him, I don't see David O. Russell doing that. But yeah, I think horror is just gonna do. Maybe there's gonna be some sections of horror which aren't gonna go as balls to the wall with it, but I do think it's going to be a genre where you're going to see people keep trying to push boundaries, and audience, I think, will react to that. I mean, look, last year, Terrifier 2 made like $12 million on a $350,000 budget, I think it was. It was unbelievable, I must admit, but audiences, I think, will respond if you're from something different.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's what it is. It's both tapping into what audience appetites are, but I think as well, like that's why a Terrifier 2 was able to do so well, and then why Ty West is getting his trilogy and all these different types of things, and is this reaction to what we're seeing elsewhere, like for example, like one of the ones like this, like on this topic, like the example that I kind of return to so much is like, if we say look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'm a Marvel nerd. I love the superhero films. I turn out for every single one because I enjoy them. They're special.
Same.
But it's all these films are just filled to the brim with like aesthetically, objectively beautiful people, but these films have like no intimacy, no like it's just they don't have any kind of they lack human desire somehow. Even when there's like relationships between characters, they don't feel like people, they don't feel real, they feel like just stereotypes, or they just feel like plot points, they don't feel like real people. And like I feel that the reason that Terrifier 2 or these type of films are doing so well is because they are reacting to that. The wider kind of zeitgeist of media we're getting is very cookie cutter, very kind of just beige and bland, and kind of just being like, as you said, trying to, be the widest appeal as possible. So when a film comes out and goes, no, fuck that, we're gonna do something different, and it reacts to that zeitgeist, people are eating it up. That's why we're getting these interesting films that are different. And I think it comes back to like something that I'm very much a firm believer of is horror as a genre is queer full stop. Like that's something that I very much say all the time, because horror
Oh,
is the
yeah.
genre that's always been transgressive. It's always been the one that comment turns the mirror towards society and comments on it. And I think people are just reacting to that now, and it's nice. It's going to be really interesting to see where the genre goes over the next few years, what direction it will go. And I just want to know what you think. Like, do you think that, the horror genre itself over the next few years, like, are we in for another golden decade of horror? What do you think for the next number of years for us?
Well, the next number of years, I think we're going to get follow-up films from filmmakers who have emerged over the past few years. Like, I can see more films from Jordan Peele, Robert Eggers, Julia DeCorno, Anna-Lily Amanpour, Ari Aster. We've got phenomenal voices that have emerged and have taken the genre into really interesting directions. Not for everyone, all these filmmakers, but really interesting places which I couldn't imagine we'd be at a decade before. But what's really going to be interesting for me are going to be the filmmakers who come out who are empowered by the works these exceptional filmmakers have delivered to the world. We're going to get from someone who grew up on Brandon Cronenberg and Jennifer Kent. And I just really love the idea of horror constantly building and doing more interesting things. But at the same time, I can see us getting like another Paranormal Activity film, another Final Destination film eventually, another Saw film is coming out, I believe. And I can see those franchises returning, but also franchises building because, well, let's face it, horror loves a franchise. Because I can see like another Malignant. Come on, take Gabriel to space. We all want it.
Yes. I'm just like immediately I'm just like yes, but also as well, is it really like, is it really a horror franchise if there isn't a chapter set in space? Like,
Yes.
like can you really be considered a horror franchise? Which is why technically in a way, like, we haven't had Michael Myers in space yet. So like,
Yes.
I'd be willing to be, have Michael Myers have another run out if he's in space. Like, I think otherwise there's no point in bringing him back. There's nothing else you can do. But set him in space, I'm here for that.
Agreed. He's had 13 films. Why not do something a bit different for the 14th? I mean, it's gonna get the right writer and filmmaker. You've got gold on your hands. Come on.
Exactly. Like, if we could have Pinhead in space, we can definitely have Michael Myers in space.
Yes.
Like, yes, I think it is going to be so interesting to see where things will go. And like, I like how you mentioned them, that there is going to be, they've already confirmed that there will be another Saw film. And I think even they said Tobin Bell is coming back for it, which is going to be
Yes.
interesting. I'm just kind of like, I guess. That's probably a reaction to Spiral not being that good or not being received that well, that they're kind of like, if we want to jump back into the Saw toolbox, we need to go back in time or something. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But also, they've confirmed that there is a new Final Destination film coming out that's in pre-production now, I think. But I love how it's like even those type of existing franchises are, going to have new installments. And I think that's because of, again, the past decade of horror films we've had has the way horror has shifted. People are now looking back on films from previous decades or film franchises and kind of reappraising them and kind of looking at them under a new light. And I'm just like all here for it. Like give me new takes on something that already exists. Like more like there's no such thing in my eyes as bad, like decisions when it comes to horror. Like, I know a lot of people are like, oh no, I don't want remakes, or and I'm just like, well, give me a reinterpretation if it's interesting. At the end of the day, the worst thing can happen is that it's just treading the same ground. But if it introduces new people to an existing IP, or if it introduces new people to just horror in general, then that's just a net positive in my eyes. Like we want horror fans to continue to grow and continue to exist. So, like, complete tangent, but I've seen a lot of like kind of not like negative criticism, but I've seen a lot of people kind of like maybe slightly disappointed with Megan. I personally loved it. I've seen it twice in the cinema. I had great time with it. It was delivered exactly what I wanted. But I've seen a lot of people saying that, oh, they really wished it had been more violent, or they feel like Megan pulled her punches. And I know Akilah Cooper did confirm that it was originally supposed to be R, but it got cut to obviously have like a more like a friendly rating, I guess. And to me, like, that's not necessarily a negative, because if you make a film that's more accessible for a younger audience, for a teenage audience, and it gets them hooked into going, oh, like we were when we were teenagers, going, hey, horror, this is something for me. That's again a good thing. Like, I think when you're a horror fan as an adult, you forget how important it is to have quote unquote gateway horrors, like have horror that is accessible at a younger age. And, at the end of the day, when it comes to home releases, they'll eventually release the rated R so adults can watch it at home and stuff like that. So yeah, it's I think after that little ramble, I think it's just I'm excited to see where horror is going to go. I think it's only going to continue making strides in a more positive direction, and positive meaning more inclusive and progressive direction. It can only get better. So I think as a last kind of tying it off question to bring us to a close, and it's always like the oxymoron question, but what are your comfort horror films? Like, if you've had an absolutely shit day, which films do you turn to because you know that you're just going to have a good time with them?
Okay, so comfort horror films. The one which I watch every year, regardless, is John Carpenter's Halloween, the 1978 classic. That's my favorite horror film of all time. I think it's so effective in its simplicity. I first watched it October 31st, 2011, and I've watched it every October 31st since.
Yes.
I just adore it. I also re really love Near Dark, Catherine Bigelow's blend of Western and vampires. And when you've got Bill Paxton giving such a live wire performance, and Joshua John Miller as the bitter man trapped in a boy's body, how can you not just have a good time with it? And I think I gotta put Evil Dead 2 on there. I think it's just so effective in the way it can make me laugh and make me a bit unnerved. It's I mean, where else are you going to see a talking moose head and a severed hand giving the middle finger?
Exactly. I just love those imagery, and yes, 100%. And again, that circles back to how we opened it all up. Like, horror can do anything and be anything, and that's why we return to it and love it. And yeah, that's a good list of films, and I love how Halloween is the first one you listed, because yeah, that's again one that I revisit every year. And it's interesting, when I first watched Halloween, I guess I was like, I fell into the camp of, I think, a lot of people who do watch it. But when I first watched it, I was like, oh, this is like really slow. And I thought it was like slow and boring. So I was like, because it wasn't what I was used to. So I was just like, I didn't really appreciate it. But then when I revisited it, I was just like, no, this is actually really powerful and affecting. And the fact that it is deliberately slow makes it more affecting. Like, you have to kind of just be there for it. But yeah, it's one of the most, it's a classic for a reason. But yeah, no, that's a
Absolutely.
great list of films. And yeah, before I let you go and we just kind of tie off this conversation, where can people find you and support your own writing, and yeah, just kind of be there in your corner?
Well, if you want to find me, I'm on Twitter and Letterboxd at RoddersJ04. That's with two D's. All my writings, reviews, articles, and that are collected at thereviewingrodders.co.uk. Again, two D's. So yeah, come check it out and say hi on Twitter. I don't bite.
Amazing, amazing, brilliant. And yeah, actually, one very last simple question before I actually close it off. But
Okay.
are there any specific horror films that you're most looking forward to coming out this year?
Ooh. God, what is out this year? Oh, Scream 6. I love the Scream films. I really liked the most recent sequel reboot, and the fact that the most in a really interesting trailer dropped, and we've got let what a month until the new one comes out. I'm just really excited to see where this franchise goes.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I've already, my local Cineworld is doing a double bill of Scream 5 and Scream 6.
Ooh.
So I've booked myself in for that. So I'm already very excited. But
What about
yeah.
you? What are you excited for?
Well, yep, Scream, that's definitely one I'm super excited for. I'm really interested to see what the new Evil Dead Rises, that was called. That
Oh, yes.
looks like it's going to be good. Gory fun. I'm excited for that.
Oh, yeah.
Technically, like, even though it's technically a film from last year, but annoyingly, the way it works for Irish and UK releases, and I don't like doing dodgy watching, like, it's just, I'm just like, if I'm going to watch something at home, I want it to be full HD. Pearl, that's coming out in March. I'm very,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
And Infinity Pool, both of those are going to be coming out in March, so I'm looking forward to those. But yeah, there's a good number of ones. Actually, last week, even though it was a new one to me, didn't know it was going to be a film, but I saw it. Unwelcome.
Oh,
That
yeah.
was interesting. But yeah, we could have another hour talking about films we're excited about, but I just wanted to close it out with that one last question. But yeah, thank you so much. And yes, I will link to all the places to find you and support your work in the show notes. And to my guests, keep your eyes and ears peeled for future releases in my Why Horror series or any other bonus content that I'm going to be dropping.